started. I think you've been hopefully getting the messages or the notes that I've sent about a couple of scheduling issues. We won't be having the criminal subcommittee on Tuesday. That meeting's been canceled because we have a Wednesday evening meeting at 5 o'clock, which is going to be a meeting in joint session with the Senate committee to hear two bills that are related to interstate compacts. I believe on both of them, I know at least on one of them, the interstate compact dealing with adult offenders, supervision of adult offenders, that we've got people coming in from Lexington, Kentucky to testify about that measure from the Council on State Governments, and I think some folks from the National Institutes of Justice. I don't remember exactly who the team is, but we've got some out-of-state witnesses, and that's one of the reasons we decided to sit in joint session with the Senate.
Are we meeting in the morning on Wednesday as well?
I believe the Wednesday Civil Committee will meet at its scheduled time. And then also on Monday, since it's the last day for bill introduction, I've scheduled a 4 o'clock meeting of a full committee on Monday afternoon, strictly for the purposes of possible measure introduction. And if there are no measures to be introduced at 4 o'clock on Friday, I'll have judiciary staff contact your offices. But I'd like to find a quorum of the committee if necessary for introducing measures, and certainly each of you are welcome if you've got last-minute bills that you would like introduced as committee bills, to if you've got them available at 4 o'clock on Monday for purposes of introduction. Mr. Taylor, good morning.
Could I maybe mention one more announcement?
Yes, you certainly may.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on March 9th, I think, which is a Friday, be a week, 2 weeks from today, the chair of the committee is going to be running a pizza party, because you may remember we had a pizza party early in session. This is for all the staff, particularly legislative council staff, after what they've gone through for the last month. And also so the House members and Senate members can get together again. So
March 9th?
Yes.
March 9th, right. And that will be noon, and we'll probably do it in room 350. And it will be for legislative council staff, people who've been down there slaving away on our measures, and judiciary staff, and obviously both House and Senate Judiciary Committee members are invited. And it's an opportunity also to arm wrestle or talk to that legislative council drafter about amendments that you might be requesting in the near future. No, actually, I'm just don't bug them while they're eating their pizza. It would be polite.
Assuming we get all our bills back.
I have great confidence that we'll get all our bills back. But that's why we're scheduling a 4 o'clock meeting.
Is it 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening?
No, it's at 5 o'clock. Isn't that right, Mr. Taylor? Our meeting is 5 o'clock Wednesday evening.
That's correct. 5 o'clock Wednesday morning.
Wednesday evening.
Wednesday evening, yes.
Right.
Here
in this committee room. Yeah. No.
That's in hearing
room. No, it's in hearing room F.
F, right.
In hearing room F. We need to do that to accommodate the Senate committee. So have I thoroughly gotten everyone confused yet?
Yeah.
Again? Read your memos. I've sent you all memos on this issue. Read your memos and you'll be fine. Okay. We are going to start this morning with some measure introduction. Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, LC 2811 comes to you from the Oregon Advocacy Center, directs the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Service Division to ensure that designee conducting investigation of alleged abuse of mentally ill or developmentally disabled persons has training and experience to conduct the impartial investigation. Chair, members of the committee, LC 2812 comes to you from the Oregon Advocacy Center, directs the Mental Health Division to develop plans for ensuring improving health and safety and quality supports and services available to individuals with developmental disabilities. LC 2883 comes to you from, I don't know, prohibits discrimination in public education based on sexual orientation or perceived sexual orientation. LC 3075 comes to you from Kurt Krager, repeals certain laws requiring that surviving spouse of decedent receive at least one-fourth of probated estate of decedent despite contrary to provision in deceased will. LC 3124 authorizes school board to prohibit persons with concealed handgun licenses from possessing firearms on public school property. Doesn't say who it's from. LC 3213, modifies provisions relating to interception of oral communications. This is a bill that we've had a work group on with the Criminal Defense Bar and the Department of Justice.
The body wire bill.
Body wire bill, okay. Chair. LC 3318 comes to you from the Council on Court Procedures, modifies procedures for promulgation, amendment, or repeal of rules of civil process by Council on Court Procedures. LC 3351 permits rebuttable presumption of obligor's inability to pay child support when obligor receives certain types of public assistance from the Department of Human Resources. Oh, not sure where that comes from.
Comes from Bill Whitney.
Okay. Comes from
good. Representative Whitney, Representative Lowe?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Okay.
I think this is the one, and Ron L. has been active in.
Okay.
LC 3450 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Board of Bar Governors. Provides that Board of Bar Governors, Oregon State Bar, shall set date of annual election for Board of Bar Governors and for House of Delegates. LC 3475 comes to you from the Oregon Restaurant Association, provides that patrons or guests who voluntarily consumes alcoholic beverages served by Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensee or permittee or by social host does not have a cause of action against the server based on common law negligence, even though alcoholic beverages are served to patron or guest while patron or guest is visibly intoxicated.
Nice try.
LC 3507 repeals cap for $500,000 and awards of non-economic damages.
Where does that come from?
Doesn't say.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah.
in reaction to the Lakin case. I mean, I think the cap may be moot now. LC 3534 limits committees' commitments to Oregon Youth Authority to youth offenders who have committed acts that, if committed by an adult, would constitute felony. Doesn't say.
What bills at the request of the Oregon Youth Authority?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 3625 changes age when person may marry from 17 to 18. It changes one word and has a relating clause relating to domestic relations.
Wink, wink.
Yeah,
all right.
I got a bunch of 17
year olds.
Really
nice.
Big divide privilege.
No,
relating
clause,
relating
clause. Wink, wink. It goes the other way. LC 3627 provides the statute of ultimate repose for negligence is 9 years instead of 10 years. One word change relating to negligence.
Wink, wink.
All right. LC 3628 extends statute of limitations from 10 years to 12 years for actions to recover real property and to recover possession of real property. This is relating to statute of limitations change one word. LC 3629 extends from 10 days to 15 days the amount of time recall delegates to the Oregon State Bar have to resign before ballots or recall decisions are mailed.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Shetterly.
So who wanted the Oregon State Bar relating clause?
That's the two in the back.
LC 3630 provides that certain motions and other pleadings and civil actions must be filed no later than 15 days after service of pleading moved against a service of pleading to which response of pleading is directed. It changes 10 to 15 relating to civil procedure. LC 3631 creates three new circuit court judge positions in Multnomah County, declares emergency effective upon passage, so it changes 37 to 40 relating to judges. LC 3776, Multnomah County District Attorneys Association, allows district attorney to establish bad check diversion program in office of district attorney. LC 3785 limits tort liability of employer for certain intentional acts of employer or agent to situations where employer has certain knowledge about employer or agent and fails to take reasonable steps to prevent commission of the tort. Chair, members of the committee,
one more.
LC 4041 establishes 2-year statute of limitations for product liability, civil action for tobacco-related disease, exempts actions from statute of repose. doesn't say who the response is.
That's one that just arrived this morning, so it's probably not in your pack. Okay, committee is, it's always exciting at this time of the session as bills come through the process. We'll probably have another similarly sized stack by Monday afternoon, I would suspect. So, with all the usual provisions and provisos, the chair would move these bills for introduction. Is there any objection? Seeing none, bills will be introduced as Judiciary Committee bills. We're going to start this morning by a public hearing on HJM2. And I'll open that public hearing now, and I'll invite Representative Close to come forward. Good morning, Representative Close.
Good morning. You guys are up bright and early. Oh, my committee shows up at 8:30. Thank you, Chair Williams and members of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Representative Betsy Close, representing House District 36. I appreciate the opportunity to present this morning this rather tragic situation to you. New Tribes Mission is a Christian group operating out of Sanford, Florida since 1942 for the purpose of sending missionaries to unreached people groups to present biblical scripture translation in their language and to establish churches. They have a doctrinal statement similar to many other Christian organizations and have 3,000 missionaries going to remote tribes in 17 countries. On January 31, 1993, three American missionaries from this group were kidnapped from their homes in Panama and taken by armed guerrillas across the border into Colombia. Their names are Dave Mankins, Mark Rich, and Rich Tenenoff. They are thought to be held by the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, and they are the longest held American hostages. On May 10, 1999, Patty Tenenoff, wife of the captured missionary Rick Tenenoff, held a press conference at the New Jersey State Capitol. A legislative resolution presented that day was adopted unanimously by the New Jersey Assembly, and I have it here. And I present this memorial at the request of Assemblyman Scott Garrett of New Jersey, who did the resolution there. In summary, the wives of the three captives have tried valiantly for 8 years to secure information about their husbands. The television program 2020 featured a story on the families of these men and their plight. On January 31, 2001, the U.S. State Department finally acknowledged that these men had been missing for 8 years and called on the guerrillas to release them. However, a police and or military escort is needed to accompany any group going to where the men were last seen. I ask members of the 2001 Oregon Legislature to join me in calling for an end to this long trauma with a proclamation to our government to become actively involved in the return of these three men. Thank you for your kind consideration.
Thank you, Representative Close. Are there any questions for Representative Close on this issue? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Any committee discussion about this issue? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing. Is there any, I guess I'd ask, there was no one else signed up on the witness sheet, I assume. Anyone else here to testify? Okay. Then I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to open a work session on HJM2.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of HJM2 with a recommendation of due pass.
Representative Lowe and Representative Wilson, jointly at the almost exact same moment, I think agree on moving HJM2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Lowe, do you want to speak to your motion?
It's a good idea. It's a bill of compassion. It hurts nothing, and it may help.
Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, this is obviously a situation that's been lingering for a long time, and there's really a well-known case in all communities here in this country, Christian and otherwise. And so I would just wholeheartedly ask the committee's support in passing this.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion on the measure? Anything anyone wish to discuss Representative Lowe's motion? Hearing none, why don't we call the roll?
Aye.
Rice?
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Rebo?
Aye.
Representative Jennings?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Nikki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Seeger?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Votes aye. HJM two, will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and, it's typically not my practice committee to assign a non-committee member to carry, their bill, a bill from this committee, but it would be the chair's prerogative on this instance to assign carrying HJM two to Representative Close. And then, obviously, I'd encourage both Representative Lowe and Representative Wilson, if you're so inclined to speak to them, when it's on the floor, sir. Great, thank you very much. We'll close the work session on HJM two, and we are now going to move to...
2179.
A work session on House Bill 2179. Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2179 changes the process for judicial review of orders that are issued by the Public Utilities Commission. Under current law, when the PUC issues an order, that order can go through an administrative process, a contested case hearing. After that, then there is allowed an appeal to the circuit court, and then after that, an appeal to the Court of Appeals. This bill would change that process and eliminate the appeal to the circuit court, and instead have any appeal of the contested case go directly to the Court of Appeals. This change would bring PUC orders into line, or the process for PUC orders into line with other parts of the Administrative Procedures Act. However, it would still retain certain exceptions to the APA that the PUC has. The carrier for this bill to the full committee is Representative Shetterly.
Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that we passed out of the House last session. It did not get out of the Senate before the end of the session. PUC hearings process is a little bit strange. You go through this long and often laborious process in the agency itself. These are complex cases typically. And then the current law provides that the next level of appeal is to the circuit court, where the circuit court reviews the case and conducts the proceeding based on a substantial evidence review of the PUC record. That is, they don't retry the case, but they review it on the record of the agency. Paul Lipscomb, the judge, famous judge from Marion County, testified both last session and this session about the boxes and boxes often of documents and records that these cases entail that the judges have to go through piece by piece. And then they issue their order, and the cases are almost invariably appealed straight away to the Court of Appeals for that appellate-level review. It's interesting because at the Court of Appeals, what the Court of Appeals reviews is not the trial court record or even the trial court's decision, but the Court of Appeals review is of the agency's decision. And so that level at the circuit court is just a stopover. I think somebody referred to it as a layover in Cleveland on the way to Washington, D.C., that seems to serve no purpose. It doesn't add value to the case. If anything, it takes time and it adds expense to the parties on both sides. So this would eliminate that apparently unnecessary and unproductive layover in the circuit court. It allows the case to go directly then to the Court of Appeals. This was supported by the courts, Paul Lipscomb again testifying on behalf of the judges, also by the PUC, and by Brian Bowe testified, I think, on behalf of PGE in favor of the bill. It was opposed, although for different reasons, by Quest. Ginny Lang testified on behalf of Quest, and their opposition to the bill wasn't so much the substance of the bill. They just thought that some of these other aspects of PUC proceedings that currently are not in conformity with the Administrative Procedures Act ought to be brought into conformity. And so their objection really was that this bill doesn't fix all of the problems with the PUC, but of course, this bill wasn't intended to fix all of the problems with the PUC. It does eliminate an unnecessary stopover on these PUC appeals at the trial court level.
Thank you, Representative Shirley. On that point made by Quest, as I heard another able chair of a committee this last week say that just because there aren't enough lifeboats for everyone to get off the Titanic, should it mean that no one does? I think is the reference that the chair of the Committee on Tax Fairness in School Funding / Revenue used in another hearing. Okay. Any questions of
yes.
either counsel or Representative Shetterly? Representative Walker.
Thank you. I have a question. Representative Shetterly, did anyone from the consumer groups testify, CUB, ARP, any of those? Okay. I would assume they support this bill because it saves a step and saves money.
Yeah. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was impressed as I took notes, listening to the testimony on the time that could be saved if the circuit court step were eliminated. And I think Judge Lipscomb said anywhere from 4 months to several years, conceivably. So I was impressed by that, and I think that's a major consideration for us as we contemplate moving this bill.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just want to second what Representative Shirley has said about this bill. I've had some practical experience in having represented the Citizens Utility Board in several rate cases many years ago, and knowing that the record that goes to the court after a rate hearing of 4 or 5 or 6 days and sometimes even weeks just places an unduly burden on the circuit court judge. And in terms of the time that these cases can languish in circuit court, I was involved in one case in Multnomah County Circuit Court that had been on the docket for 10 years. And finally, hopefully it got resolved, of course, but it's just too long. And I think it's a great savings of judicial efficiency here to take this step. I think it may also solve another problem. There was a series of cases, maybe counsel can remind me, where the litigants were hung up as to whether these cases should be filed in Marion County Circuit Court or Multnomah County Circuit Court.
Right.
And if you made the wrong choice and didn't refile on time, you lost your case. If we eliminate circuit court, we eliminate those venue and jurisdictional problems which have cropped up recently.
Good. Thank you. Representative Walker, did you have something to say?
No, I was going to say similar to what Representative Ackerman
okay.
said. That
great.
Sometimes you don't know the jurisdiction which circuit court to go to, so mm-hmm. he covered it. Thank you.
All right. Then, Representative Shetterly.
I move House Bill 2179 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2179 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Shannon, would you please call the roll?
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Rigo?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Sherrill Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cleaver?
Aye.
Chair Wood?
Both aye. House Bill 2179 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Shetterly, would you carry on the floor?
Yep.
We're now going to open the work session on House Bill 2616. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 2616 came to our committee from the Oregon Advocacy Center. the Oregon Advocacy Center is an organization that part of their job is to review processes that affect disabled people, the people that they represent, and monitor legislation, monitor the process, and see if legislative changes need to be made. In this case, they identified what could be a problem in terms of informed consent and informed consent to sterilization by disabled persons, and recommended to our committee that this bill be passed, which requires the judge in those cases to receive testimony from the person that's at issue, whether or not that person has the ability to consent to sterilization. previously, the judge would hear from, or under current law, the judge would hear from a team of at least three people that would discuss with the judge whether or not this person was able to form the ability to consent to this procedure. And typically the person involved would be at the hearing, but the judge was not required to take testimony from that person. What this bill would do would be require that the judge receive testimony from this person, but it doesn't change the current process in anything other than that, putting their feelings and abilities and comprehension on the record. Representative Ringo was to carry this to the full committee. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you, Council. Representative Ringo.
Well, I think Ms. Chartel did an excellent job summing it up. The only thing that I would add is there was a statement that from the Oregon Advocacy Center that they handle about 3 to 5 of these per year. So to give a sense of the scope involved, it really isn't a lot of people, but it is designed to add a little more assurance that this is done with adequate safeguards.
My recollection from my conversation, Representative Ringo, with Mr. Jundep, just in my office about this issue, is that while they are involved in 5 or 6 of them a year, that they have concerns to some degree that this process and procedure is taking place more often, but that people either aren't aware or to avoid just sort of the problems, they're not necessarily going through the hearings process. Did that get discussed at all in the committee?
I don't recall any discussion that the hearings process is being avoided at all.
If I may, members of the committee, I think what Mr. Jundep's concern was that there are a couple different ways to get to the result of consent to sterilization, and he had seen people approaching it from a slightly different way, and he just wanted to make sure that the guarantees that are involved in other ways to get to that process are also involved in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Just another point, Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative.
The statute does make an exception, a sworn affidavit, and then under certain circumstances referencing ORS 436.285, that section says that the person's presence can be waived if their presence would grossly interrupt the conduct of the hearing.
Right.
So that's just for the committee members to know there is an exception for those set of circumstances.
And is, if I'm right, the judge then gets to make the determination about whether he'll accept the affidavit in
right.
lieu of the actual testimony. Is that right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Okay.
And if I may also, there also is a provision in the statute that the court can go to another site to conduct this hearing, if that's more appropriate.
Okay. Thank you very much for the report. Are there any questions by the committee of Representative Ringo on this bill? Okay. Representative Ringo?
Mr. Chair, I move with this pass on the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ringo has moved House Bill 2616 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lowe.
I was not present at the hearing, as I was excused from it, and I had some concerns that I communicated to Ms. Miller, who presented this bill, I believe. And I'm not sure that my concerns have been addressed, so I will vote as a courtesy to put this on the floor, but I would like to reserve my right, if you please, to vote no if my questions are not answered.
That's fine. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ringo.
Yes, I'd appreciate knowing what those concerns are if I'm carrying this to the floor. I'd
I'll give you a few hints.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative
Ms. Miller?
Or
This Bob Judith was, I think, the only one who testified on this.
Oh, it was Bob Judith. Teresa Miller came to my office on 2/16/01 to lobby me about this bill, and that it was to her that I posited this question. So, but I don't even know that I have objections. I just need to finish doing my homework since I was absent on the day this was discussed.
Okay. Let me know. Yeah, please work with Representative Ringo in preparing him for the ambush. Shannon, if you'd call the roll.
Why a personal privilege? I believe I'm being impugned.
No, none meant.
Never. No impunity.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Both aye. House Bill 2616 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Ringo aptly determined that he would be carrying this bill to the floor. Thank you, Ms. Chartel.
Thank you, members of the committee. Have a good weekend.
You too.
You too.
Is it Friday already?
Mr. Taylor, good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
We are going to hold over House Bill 2344, which is the bill that expands the list of crimes that can be included as racketeering activity, which were primarily related to agricultural research issues, and what was the other component? Please, Representative Shadow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was just for the record. That's my request. This is the bill. I think we can call it. I've been looking for a handle on this bill, and I like Eco Rico. That's a good
handle.
Bill. Good handle.
Eco Rico.
Eco Rico. Okay.
Good.
The bill that adds tree spiking and interference with agricultural research, or I'm sorry, animal research, to the RICO statutes. I ask that it be held over because we have a companion bill that creates a new crime of interference with animal, I'm sorry, agricultural research that also then puts that into the RICO statute. It makes sense to me that they move together to the floor, which we wouldn't be able to do if we moved this bill today. So.
That's correct.
We have amendments coming on the other one, and I thought with that in mind, it would be best to wait until next week and deal with these together.
I think that's a wise decision. It sort of solidifies the issue at one moment on the floor for discussion. So with that, we'll hold House Bill 2344 over until next week's calendar.
The
Eco Rico bills. And are now going to open a public, a work session on House Bill 2353.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2353 comes to you from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee and not the Oregon Law Commission, so we'll have to remove that from the title. This bill creates a crime of causing another person to ingest a controlled substance analog. A person will commit this crime, a Class C felony, if the person knowingly or intentionally causes another person to ingest the drug or analog without the consent of the other person. However, if the person does this for the intent of committing a violent felony, for example, rape, it's a Class A felony. It also defines what a controlled substance analog is. What's happening now, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that they put drugs in the schedule, and the chemists change one or two molecules, and they're no longer in the schedule, despite the fact that they have basically the same effect. So what we've done is taken a definition from federal law, defines a controlled substance analog as a substance that has, one, a chemical structure that is substantially similar to the chemical structure of a controlled substance on Schedule 1 or Schedule 2, or, two, has a stimulant, depressant, or hallucinogenic effect on the central nervous system that is substantially similar to or greater than the stimulant, depressant, or hallucinogenic effect on the central nervous system of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or 2. It's the -2 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, were adopted in committee, and they are basically the bill now. And we forgot to assign a carrier to this bill.
Colleagues, we heard some testimony. We've actually had, I think, three public hearings slash work sessions on this bill. The first was to the original bill, and even at that moment, the proponents recognized that there was some broad language in the first version of the bill, which I believe to some degree created some fiscal impact issues that they were concerned with. They narrowed the bill down. There was then some additional discussion about dealing with, again, some other issues within the context of the remaining portion of the bill, and that resulted in the Dash 2 amendments. And then yesterday, Representative Vicki Walker had a constituent from her district, the sister of her legislative assistant. Am I right about that? That's the relationship? She's
my legislative assistant's sister, yes,
right.
But she does not live in my district.
But she does not live in your district.
Right.
But she came forward and gave some very poignant personal testimony about the impact of, I guess what we're in shorthand version referring to as these date rape drugs, and how it impacted her life and the lives of other people who she has now become aware of. And it was, I think, very powerful testimony before the committee. You know, we are increasing the penalties by making something a Class C felony, and then by taking something and making it a Class A felony, which is the action of someone causing another person to ingest a controlled substance with the intent of committing or facilitating a crime of violence against the other person. Knowingly or intentionally causes the other person to ingest controlled substances or a controlled substance analog without the consent of the other person. So it is, I believe, an appropriate bill with the appropriate tools given to both law enforcement and prosecutors for dealing with what is apparently a much more persistent and pernicious activity than I was certainly aware of before these hearings.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
I move House Bill 2353 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bowman has moved House Bill 2353 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any discussion to her motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you.
Walker.
Thank you. I appreciate that we had Marissa McNutt here yesterday to talk to us. Those of you who aren't here, you can view the tape, but she had very powerful testimony about how pervasive this is in high school as well as among the adult population. One of the things that came to my mind yesterday while she was talking, and from a question from Representative Lowe, is there needs to be more education about this issue to the public. And specifically, I have a call into the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to see about what kind of training they do with bartenders to keep an eye on those drinks that are at the bar that are unattended, because this is a frequent problem. One of my daughter's friends had this happen to her just a weekend ago at a local bar in Eugene, and it's very, very scary. So I hope to report back to you that I have good information from the OLCC that they're working on this.
Thank you, Representative Walker. Any other discussion? Yes, Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not hear the testimony personally, but even reading the newspaper article this morning in the Statesman Journal, it was a pretty powerful article. And so it would not be difficult to implicate. And so this is a bill I think that we should get a lot of attention and publicity, because it is a major problem.
You know, we talk about the risks in this committee oftentimes of minors' use of alcohol, and those risks, independent of this, are great. But when you compound it by someone going to a party or a rave and being potentially subjected to this on top of just maybe the lack of good judgment of going to that kind of an event as a minor in the first place, it does cause, you know, those of us with children to think about the additional things that you have to talk about to your kids when you're having conversations about the risks associated with sort of taking the first bad step and a trail of bad steps of decisions and what the potential consequences could be. It's just really a powerful issue, I think. Representative Bowman.
It really is, Mr. Chair, and I think the scary thing is that alcohol doesn't have to be involved. I mean, we've been talking about this as if the young person or whoever it is was using alcohol. And this is a drug that you can slip into anything that somebody's drinking. So
right.
if you think about teenagers having, you know, friends over and going to a party and how simple that could be. I mean, a parent and the individual can do everything possible to ensure that there's an alcohol-free and drug-free party.
Mm.
And then if somebody slips this into the drink, then you've got a whole new situation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Representative Ackerman, you had indicated an interest in speaking.
Yeah, just wanted to sort of second again what Representative Walker has said. I had a professional experience with a young woman who was a victim of a date rape under similar circumstances, and I think where the educational component comes in is that these drugs are usually associated with party and drinking, and my client felt that this was the effects of alcohol that was causing this, and she didn't quite get the message until the next day when she did not have a hangover. She felt pretty well and yet had flashbacks about what had occurred the previous evening. Had she known that earlier, she could have probably had some detection made, as the chemical detections determine exactly what she had taken. And the other problem, I think, in terms of education was, I remember testimony before the committee that most of these drugs are water-soluble and are out of your system within 12 hours.
Right.
So it really takes a good degree of vigilance and education to get on top of this, and this obviously is the first step.
Sure. Well, and I hope we can all, in the small bully pulpits that each of us have as representatives, I know that I intend to talk a little bit about this when I'm talking to some of the high school groups and student groups that I'm asked to talk to during my service as a legislator, and remind parents of the need to discuss this issue with their children. Okay, with that, I believe Representative Bowman had made the motion. Any further discussion? Shannon, would you please call the roll?
Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Representative Cheverly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Vicky Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Carl?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Votes aye. House Bill 2353 goes to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. I'm going to carry this bill, but I would encourage all the committee members who, especially those who have had personal experiences like Representative Ackerman and Representative Walker, to speak to the bill when it's on the floor, for the benefit of the members. With that, now we'll move to House
Mr.
Bill.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Bowman.
I'm disappointed that I will not be able to carry this bill, since it probably will be the only enhanced penalty bill that I will support this session.
I would be honored if you would join me as co-carrier of the bill, Representative
Bowman. I would be
pleased.
Thank you.
Please mark that as we will co-carry the bill together.
I want to know if that means that she's going to be opposing my Eco Rico bill.
Inquiry mind. You have your answer.
Representative Shetter, that should be Rico Eco.
Easier to say.
Rico Eco.
Rico Eco. Rico Eco Frico. All right, we're having way too much fun. We are now going to open the work session on House Bill 2351.
Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2351 comes to you from the Joint Judiciary Committee. It's a product of a work group. The bill clarifies under what circumstances a defendant who has pled guilty or no contest may appeal by requiring the defendant to make a colorable show that the sentence exceeded the maximum allowable by law or is unconstitutional, cruel, and unusual. There are no amendments to the bill. Representative Ackerman is the carrier.
Representative Ackerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill represents, I think, a series of bills which we will see over the next 2 or 3 weeks regarding internal efficiencies, particularly within our appellate courts. This bill applies to three basic circumstances regarding an appeal after a plea of guilty or no contest, an appeal after a probation has been revoked or a sentence suspension revoked, and also a resentencing ordered by an appellate court after a post-conviction relief case. This is a very narrow band of cases. However, in most instances, at the circuit court level where these occur, they precipitate appeals to the Court of Appeals. Statistics which we have seen in our file indicate that I think on the pleas of guilty, perhaps 94% are affirmed or dismissed by the appellate courts. 100% of the no contest pleas are disposed of by either dismissal or being affirmed. And this usually means that these cases have gone through the full briefing process at the Court of Appeals. What this bill does, it sets up an intermediate stop for these cases and requires the defendant to show on the record a what's known as a colorable claim of error in order for the case to proceed. During the testimony in the criminal subcommittee, I raised the point that this statute or this bill, if passed, would not be self-executing and should be supplemented by appellate court rules. And I don't know, I got a letter from James Nass, who also testified, and he's the appellate legal counsel, and I asked the staff to have his letter and his proposed court rules placed directed to you so you could put them in your bill file, because it does indicate what type of procedures would be implemented at the appellate court level to handle these cases. I think there is a positive physical impact here, because a great many of these cases will be washed out very early in the proceeding, because basically a finding will be made that they are not meritorious. So this bill has some very good internal efficiencies, and the rights of the defendants are fully protected in the process, and I believe the bill should go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Ackerman. Are there any questions for Representative Ackerman about House Bill 2351? No committee discussion. You've scared them off, Representative Ackerman, by your knowledge of the bill. do you have a motion?
I have a motion. I move that House Bill 2351 proceed to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 2351 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion to his motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a no on this.
Okay, Representative Lowe lodges her indication as a no. Shannon, let's call the roll.
Representative Beckman?
Aye.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
No.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Williams.
Votes aye. House Bill 2351 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Ackerman, if you would carry it on the floor, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will tell you that I'm not sure I'm right about this. Maybe the committee can help me, but you may have the pleasure of carrying the first bill out of this committee to the floor that actually creates a savings in the 2001-2003 biennium. Maybe the only bill all session that we sent out that creates a savings in this
biennium. Actually, Mr. Chair, our PUC bill.
Oh,
yeah.
Does that create a little savings?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's in other funds. That's an other fund savings as opposed to a general fund. You only get credit if it's general fund money, Representative Shetterly. Representative Ringo?
I sold the very first bill on the floor as a cost-saving measure. I hope I accurate.
Well, I hope you were, too.
That was indeterminate.
Yeah, that's right. Indeterminate. Okay, we will now open the work session on House Bill 2379. Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2379 comes to you from the Oregon Criminal Defensors Association. The bill, as amended, and it's a dash two amendments, do two things. The original bill excludes riding or using a public transit vehicle from a crime of unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. I think we heard testimony about people being charged on Max. And then the second part of the bill, which is the dash two amendments, it creates a crime of interference with public transportation and classifies the crime as a class A misdemeanor. person commits a crime if the person intentionally enters a public transit vehicle or station when the person has been lawfully excluded, B, intentionally interferes with the use of a public transportation vehicle, C, while in a public transit vehicle or station recklessly creates a risk to public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm by engaging in unruly, harmful, or harassing behavior, D, subjects another passenger or transit employee to offensive physical contact. And that's based on the disorderly conduct statute.
Representative Bowman is a carrier, as I recall.
That's correct,
that
Mr. Chair.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. And thank you, counsel. What this bill did, as counsel stated, is number one, it clarified that this was not, in fact, a Class C felony if someone did not pay their fare on the transit bus or MAX line, and will clarify in statute that this, in fact, is a misdemeanor crime and not a felony. Last legislative session, we passed a bill, unauthorized use of a vehicle, to get at people who hadn't quite stolen the vehicle yet, but they were actually inside the vehicle. And it's one of those things that I like to always caution us, because when we pass legislation, sometimes it has unintended consequences. And this was a perfect example. And so this bill actually cleans up the bill that we did last session. I don't believe any of us thought that if you didn't pay your $1.20 to get on the bus last session, that you would end up with a Class C felony conviction. And so I'm pleased to be carrying this bill to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bowman. My recollection from the hearings is that there was considerable input in the work group working with both the folks primarily from TriMet, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, on
Chair.
Clarifying
yes.
the amendments to the bill revising the original version of the bill, which was just to sort of put us back to where we were. This actually gives them the tool that they think they accurately need to address those chronic offenders, which is, I think, what they want.
Which was their issue, yes.
Without creating a significant loophole in the statute that would allow anybody who offends to potentially be charged with felonies. So it looked like everybody was able to come together in a good process and get the right bill out. Are there any questions for Representative Bowman about the bill? All right, Representative Bowman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2379 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bowman moves House Bill 2379 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion as to the motion? Seeing none, call the roll. Shannon.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative
Bowman. Aye. Representative Low. Aye. Representative Ringo. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Representative
Vicky Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bowman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Williams.
Votes aye. House Bill 2379 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Bowman to carry.
Yes. We're done?
That concludes our committee for this morning. You have an hour and 5 extra minutes on your schedules. I hope you use it effectively.
I won't know what to do with that hour.
This morning? Start late?
No.
Committee is adjourned.
Hey, do we have a revisor's bill this session? Or is that...
No, we do.